Welcome back to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com. I'm your host, Peter Andrews. This is the second half of our season recap, postseason recap podcast. I'm joined by Mike Toney, Ian Halpern, George Clark, and Jonathan Tannenwald. Thus far, we have talked about Yale's trip through the tournament. We've talked about Princeton, the NIT, Columbia's CIT championship, three coaching changes in the Ivy League. And now we're at, I want to do two things. I want to do a quick season recap, and I want to do a really, really premature look ahead to next year. And then we will call it a season, as crazy as that is, that we'll be done here. So let's start with a season recap. And so I guess I'll just ask a couple questions to the panel to get started. For each of you, is there a moment or a game from this season that will stick with you as your memory of the 2015-16 Ivy season?
Probably all those close Princeton wins, to be brutally honest. I mean, because there were finishes. I'm just not going to forget Princeton's comeback at the Palestra. I'm not going to forget Devin Kennedy against Columbia.
As much as some of us would like to.
Exactly. Both of us, frankly, for those respective games. And also Princeton's finish at Harvard, too. Patrick Steves. Princeton just had a lot of finishes that went either way. And, you know, those ice and jumpers, the one against Dartmouth to save Yale's Ivy title run, certainly comes to mind, and all of them against Baylor. I don't know, you look for those little moments, those are the ones that are popping in my head as I try to sink into that question right now.
Yeah, I'll add for you, Peter, Rosenberg's shot at Lavides. That was a good one. But my answer was going to be Mason against Dartmouth as well. And then that final game at Columbia for me, being there personally, was pretty awesome when Yale ran on the court after they secured the title.
For me, Michael, you've already mentioned it. The 20 seconds at the end of the regulation when Princeton played at Columbia and Devin Kennedy had 8 points to tie the game, that's going to be a memory that will rest with me forever. But what I do, more than just one memory, Princeton had its season on the line 3 straight weeks, Columbia, Yale, and then Columbia again, where we really only a loss in any of those games would pretty much have ended our chances of contending for the title. And we won all three of the games after losing at Yale. I love this team, and I love their chances next year. My big memory is the end of regulation at or winning the game at Columbia, but the way it was tied at the end of regulation is just phenomenal.
I will go in a slightly different direction. As much as I enjoyed Yale finally getting over the line, as much as you could easily argue that the signature plays of the regular season were, as you said, Princeton's comeback at Levy twice. I will take the spectacularly blossoming rivalry between the Penn and Princeton women. And the high drama of both games, the blocked shot at the end of the Palestra to win the first game for Penn, and then Penn winning the second game at Jadwin, and the two-bit Ivy dream coming true, even if not in a way that some folks may have expected, wanted, et cetera. And the quote of the season from Courtney Banger.
JB.
She said it.
You disrespected her.
I like that Jonathan Tannenwald's quote of the season is a quote that he got in trouble for from the...
Mind you, I was not the only one who reported it.
Sure,
I was not
close.
You're the only one who got called out on it, though.
Yeah, I was the only one who got called out on it, and I appreciate it. For those who don't know, After the first game at Palestra, Courtney Bangert said of Penn, they played a junior high school 2-3 zone defense and competed harder than we did. Now, this got the attention of everybody in the press room, as you might imagine. I and the Daily Pennsylvanian and a few other folks tweeted up. There was no further explanation as to what Banger meant by a junior high school 2-3 zone defense. In fact, that did not come until March after the game at Jadon, when Banger went to the trouble of explaining what she meant, and that from a tactical perspective, it implied it was with regards to the length of the zone and how far they spread out. Shall I read the quote in its entirety, gentlemen? Okay.
I think you're going to do it anyway.
I wasn't sure whether I was going to, but I have it up. So. Bangert said,
"Cleanse your soul,
they extended their zone more. So in the first game, they played more of like a junior high, which was more paused. I know our buddy over here, I think hopefully he's not here. Oh, he is. Oh. You use that in a way that I thought was pretty disrespectful. And I'm sitting there about, I don't know, 6 feet away from Courtney, and I said I had no intent to disrespect. And she said, no problem, and she goes back to talking very quickly, no problem, so a junior high zone, as we call it in our business, it doesn't extend beyond the arc. They extended their zone more on the arc this time, so it's more of a traditional 2-3. I think those of us in the press room at the Palestra that night would have appreciated the fuller explanation the first time around.
Jonathan,
earlier, yeah.
Unlike any of the other participants in this podcast, I was in the press room that night. I heard the quote, and I took it to mean she had called her own team out for its failure to execute against that zone. The zone was not spread out. It should not have been that difficult for her team to compete against it. And it was. It wasn't a comment on Penn. It was a calling out to her own players, one of whom sat next to her and nodded her head as that observation was made by her coach. It was not and Courtney has made her own bed over the years and it certainly has to lie in it. But it was erroneous, it seems to me, to suggest that she was disrespectful of Penn in that particular instance, having just been defeated by them in a very good ball game.
And that's part of why I said I would have appreciated the explanation at the time, because they're a very, very good team. Any interaction and Alex Wheatley are terrific players, among many others. And Bangert, frankly, is very good for the league. Her coaching acumen, her charisma, are great assets that improve the profile of Ivy League women's basketball.
You'll notice that one of her assistants was just hired as Stephanie Glantz's replacement at Columbia.
Who was a Columbia alum, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, but it's someone who spent the last 6 years on Bangert's bench.
It's look, every once in a while, when you are looking, and this happens to all of us in the media in various ways, various times, when you are looking for a way to give a good sporting contest that was probably out of the limelight more exposure, when a headline-worthy quote falls into your lap, you make use of it. As I said, I think Courtney's a great coach. But I also think that Mike McLaughlin was within his rights to say that he was very proud of his junior high 2-3 zone defense.
Right, absolutely. So I'm not quibbling with that. And I think, in fairness to Courtney, although I cannot obviously speak for her, I think she would readily acknowledge that Penn was a better team than she put on the floor this year. And I saw both of the games that you attended. They were both really good games. Penn clearly was the better team on both nights. And that kid, and I can't pronounce her last name, Travis? Michelle.
McKetty.
She was, pardon me?
Yeah.
No, Michelle McKetty.
Not Spanish. Yeah, she is really good, and it got better, and is going to be a really great player before she's done. So Penn is solid. One of the things I'm really looking forward to in this Ivy League tournament is you're going to have the women playing at the same time. It's going to be a great weekend.
Hey, all Peter, right. I know you want to get back on track. I just want to add one closing point to the best games topic.
Yeah.
Yale played Princeton at home in January, and then they played again in mid-February at Princeton, and those should have been the two biggest games of the year. I'm pretty neutral on the tournament. I'm excited as a fan, but I don't know that it's going to help us send the best team. But one thing that it will do is provide us with, hopefully, the most exciting games at the end of the season. And I think there's something to be said for that, to have those games, not in the middle of January, but at the end of the season. And so I think that's a good thing.
I think there is, too. Although I'll also say I think it gives each week of the regular season its own sort of intrigue.
Yeah.
I've had enough time now to come up with my four favorite moments of this season, and then we'll move on to our next season preview. My four favorite moments of 2016. One, in no particular order. One, Alex Rosenberg's dagger against Harvard, full circle with 2 years ago. That was great to see. Two, against Harvard, Maudo Lowe's 65-foot buzzer beater at the end of the first half. Maudo Lowe does everything with quite a lot of nonchalance, but I've never seen someone more nonchalantly fire up a 65-foot buzzer beater. That was entertaining. And I liked it, too, because Columbia, with that win, eliminated Harvard from postseason, from Ivy League championship contention, which is something I had been wanting to happen for a long time. I enjoyed, and then in the CIT final, Grant Mullins's layup and one, where he was basically clotheslined 2 feet away from the basket, flung up a layup, it went in. They took the lead and never looked back. And then after the game, in terms of quotes I liked from coaches, I think Kyle Smith is the one who said, we went up to cut down the nets and none of us really knew what to do. So I think that summarizes that pretty neatly. All right, let's do, as our last act of Season 2 of On the Vine, before I start thanking everyone, way too early predictions for next year. And I guess the question for everyone is sort of two parts. One is, what do you think the big storylines will be? And two, I'd like everyone to give me their four tournament participants for next year. So why don't I start with Ian, because I feel like starting with Ian.
Okay. I think the biggest storyline coming into the season is Harvard's recruiting class, number 11 on ESPN in the country. We've been hearing about it, it seems like, for decades. Their 2017 class. I know that's not true, but it seems like that.
It definitely feels true.
Yeah. So we'll see just how good those guys are. The youth versus experience matchup at the top of the standings, I think, with Harvard and Princeton. So those are my top two seeds coming in. I probably, if I had, gun to my head, I'd put Princeton at one and Harvard at two. I'll give my boys the hometown discount at three. And then that fourth slot seems to be kind of up for grabs. I will go with, I think some people would argue that Cornell has a lot coming back, but it's such a mess there. It's hard to consider them a real contender for the top half. So it's really Columbia or Penn, I guess. And I will go with Columbia.
So I knew you were going to do that. Keep talking.
But, I mean, it could be Penn. I trust what Donahue is doing. We'll see what happens.
I'm going last.
I agree with Ian that the storyline will be the Harvard recruiting class. And it's captivating to me to consider that they have six top 100 players, is it, or five top 100 players, all of whom were early admitted to Harvard. It seems to me that the statistical probability of of five top 100 players being academically qualified for early admission at Harvard is rather remote.
You don't say. You don't say.
I think that Scalise and you talk, Peter, you talked about a deal with the devil that Princeton made all year. Well, I think Scalise and Amaker have made their own deal with the devil, and
I have no problem
somehow
with it.
They've somehow taken over the admissions office at Harvard.
Scalise,
but that's going to be the
deal with the devil. He made a deal with himself.
That's going to be the storyline. The Harvard recruiting class, if they can all play together, that's going to be clearly the most talented team probably to ever take the floor in the Ivy League. Princeton will compete and may be the preseason favorite because they've got everybody back. But and they will make the top four, that's for sure. And I think Penn will as well as Yale.
Mike Tony has stepped away for a second, so Jonathan, you're up next.
Princeton will be picked to win the league in the preseason poll, but that does not necessarily mean they will actually do so.
I mean, that is certainly an accurate statement that the preseason poll does not determine the results on the court.
The biggest story coming into the season will be the existence of the postseason tournament, is what everybody outside of the Ivy League bubble is talking about even more than Harvard's recruiting class, as evidenced by the fact that Steve Donohue is asked about it everywhere he goes in Philadelphia. And I'd imagine that he's not alone in terms of the Ivy League coaches making their various travels. My top four in order: Harvard 1, Princeton 2, Penn 3, Yale 4, which sets up semifinals of Harvard, Yale, and Penn Princeton.
Woo!
And if Tom Beckett and if Beckett and Scalise, the ADs at Yale and Harvard, think that the atmosphere at the Palestra was pleasant for the playoff game there 2 years ago, I would commend them to stick around for that Penn Princeton semifinal, because it's going to put that one to shame. And I have a hunch that the Penn program will use having that tournament on its home floor as some motivation, in part because a number of people have a hunch that should Penn do well in that tournament, it won't be at the Palestra in 2018.
And I think that would be the right decision as well.
Okay, Peter, then where do you play it?
Anywhere but one of the eight Ivy venues. I don't really care where.
The league doesn't want to pay rent, so where do you play it?
The league also doesn't want to have another
school's logo on the floor.
Play it at the one seed.
Buy a new floor. I don't care. Play it on the blacktop in Harlem. Just don't play it at the home of one of the eight schools. Although, then again, I do dispute that Penn will be an upper division team next year, so it should all be moot when we come right down to it.
Who said play it at the one seed?
I said play it at the one seed, and you're going to say, well, what about playing it in Hanover? Nobody will go. And I'll say nobody will. That will never happen because Dartmouth will never be the one seed.
I don't care about playing it in Hanover. I care about playing it in Boston.
And you don't want to play it in the B&E's, yeah. I mean, that is part of the problem.
Gym, and if you have a situation, which I think the league has to make some amount of contingency for, fair or not, if you have a situation where the four men's programs in and the four women's programs in are different, you're giving each school 550 tickets, if that. And I'm not sure that that makes a lot of sense.
I think that's a valid point. Are they building a bigger stadium at Harvard? Weren't they talking about it a few years ago, building a bigger –
I don't think they're actually going to do it, though. I mean, look, there's okay. I've got
it's
plenty
not
of
going
ideas.
To be much bigger.
Oh, okay.
My understanding is that the plans don't call for an arena much larger than the one they have now.
Hmm. The there's plenty of places where you could go if the league is willing. And I think that by 2018, they might be willing to play rent. They could go to Trenton, which has an arena of the right size. They could go to Bridgeport, which has an arena of the right size. They could go to Providence, which I think would be perfect to play at the Dunkin' Donuts Center.
The Dunk, yeah.
But I don't
certainly
think
the correct
I
name for a venue. All right, Mike Tony is back. Mike, the question to you, which has already been answered by the other three panelists other than me, the storylines going into next year and your projected Ivy tournament next March.
Well, geez. I think it's definitely, having not heard what anyone else said, so I hope I don't repeat, but I'll be short about this. I think it's clearly the conventional wisdom is it's coming down to Harvard and Princeton. I think that, you know, it's going to be a classic example of experience versus frosh there, and that, you know, I have to play it safe and go with those two for a tournament final, if that's what you're discussing here. I apologize, my computer isn't conditioned enough to go to the extra innings like we've gone here, or overtime, I should say. Don't want to mix my sports, but yeah.
Extra time is what we call it here.
Extra time, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to come down to, Hans Brace at the free throw line to win at the Palestra, and Penn fans can just drown.
We need your 3-4.
Oh, 3-4, sorry. Yeah. I thought we were still in the final two. I would say that's actually a better question, isn't it? That's why Peter's the host. I'll throw Penn in there at the 4 and Yale 3.
All right.
Who's the 1?
Who's the 1?
Princeton.
So your semifinals are also Princeton, Penn, and Harvard U.
Yep. The way it should be.
No, it's not going to be like that. Let me tell y'all how it's all going to go down. Peter,
there is karma in college basketball in a way there is not always in soccer. So,
and probably descending, I will be descending into less seriousness as we go along. I do think the big storyline will be whether Harvard's vaunted, amazing recruiting class will ruin the Ivy League. It'll also be interesting to see how Yale copes with the loss of Mekhi Mason to the NBA draft. The new coach of Dartmouth, Byron Scott, will probably not help them very much improve the league. I think the tournament, you know, your one seed is going to be Princeton, your two seed is going to be Harvard, your three seed, you know, without Mekhi, it's going to be tough, but I think it's going to be Yale. Columbia's going to get the 4 seed. Behind the C.J. Davis to Lucas Meisner, Luke Petrosic tandem, which should be a lot of fun to watch. And the way it's going to go down, Columbia's going to beat Harvard, and I don't care who wins the other game, and then Columbia's going to beat whoever won the second game. And, of course, Columbia will win the first Ivy League tournament on the floor of the Palestra. Write it down right now. You heard it here first. That...
Before we leave the tournament discussion, I do want to mention that Michael Tony will be hosting on behalf of Ivy Hoops Online a gala reception in Philadelphia on Saturday evening during the tournament weekend at a place and a site to be determined. If anyone is listening out there, please make a reservation by going to Ivy Hoops Online and giving us your contact information. It's going to be a great night. We will be entertained by remarks from Jonathan Tannenwald on the state of the tournament to that point. So don't miss it.
Would that were true, I will be watching a team that I actually cover.
Well, I appreciate that George has taken it upon himself to just declare what Mike's plans are. I am, however, very much looking forward to this reception. We here at the Ivy Hoops Online community will gladly take donations of venue, especially because I do want to have a live episode in the flesh of On the Vine, which could be easy.
If I can send you the bill, Peter, I've got the venue.
All right. Well, it could be either. I feel like a live episode could either be a party and a half or end with even more yelling than usual. So that's. That is going to do it for this episode, nearly 90 minutes long, and this entire season of On the Vine. It's the second season of On the Vine that we have put together on this website, and it's been a lot of fun. I have really enjoyed doing it for two consecutive years, and we will continue next year. I can say that right now. Which is actually not something I could say last year because, I'm the one who does all who does 50% of the work, and I moved across the country. Now I'm settled in, so we'll keep it
Peter,
going.
Peter, why don't we do one on June 1st or thereabouts?
Yeah, you want to do one at Levi's for the Copa America?
I'll be in San Francisco for a few days before that. So
yeah, all right, we can make that work. I think more likely than not we're going to take the summer off, but.
Okay. But we'll say 2-bit Tan and Walt next season.
Yeah, 2-bit Tan and Walt. That'll be a good time.
yeah,
I want to say thank you to everyone who has listened. We appreciate your comments. We appreciate your tweets, unless they are insulting Columbia players, in which case we do not appreciate them. I want to say thank you to all of our guests throughout the year, and I don't want to forget anyone, but definitely Sam Tidings. Michael James, John Templin, and some other guests that we've had on who are unfortunately escaping me right now. You know who they are. And our guest tonight, thank you very much to Jonathan Tannenwald of Philly.com.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much to George Clark. Oh, sorry, Rob Brown was also one of our very common guests this year. So, Rob, thank you very much. George Clark, thank you so much, as always, for putting up with my nonsense all season long.
It's been a lot of fun all year, and I'm looking forward to next year. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you to Ian Halpern, the founder of this website, who has entrusted Mike and, to a much lesser extent, me with keeping it operational. Thank you very much for coming on the show, and I'm looking forward to when you move out here in the summer.
Thanks, Pete. This is the end of our fifth season of IvyHoopsOnline.com, and it brings me great joy to see the community that has developed, and your work and Mike's work on this podcast in particular is phenomenal, and I think it brings so much passion and color to those of us who follow Ivy Hoops, so I thank you guys a lot, and I also am looking forward to coming out to the West Coast and taking a couple seats on the red eye, hopefully together back to Philadelphia next year for the tournament.
I'll add on to that, Peter, that those of us who cover the league back in the day, just guys like myself, Mike James, Jake Wilson, John Solomon, there's so much more of it now than all of us old geezers relative to covering Ivy League basketball of the last 15 years or so. I think we're very thankful that there's the amount of coverage that there is now, because for a long time there wasn't.
You know, we're happy that we live in a more enlightened age, I guess. Thank you, last but first and foremost, to Mike Tony, the king of this website, the guy who does so much work behind the scenes to keep all of the posts coming, to get guests on the show. Basically, the way it works is I tell Mike who I would like to have on the show, and then he just, like, magically makes it happen. For that, I'm greatly appreciative. Mike works so hard to run Ivy Hoops Online. This podcast would not be possible without him. And thank you very much for when I emailed you in November of last year and said, I think this will be a fun thing to do. You actually listened to me. So thanks as always, Mike.
Absolutely. This is a wonderful experience. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
What's not work?
Yeah, Mike, I remember this very strongly. This is the second year in a row where Mike has tried to, like, say thank you to me for putting the show on. Last year, Mixler cut him off halfway through, and this time his computer just turned off midway through. So that just about sums everything up pretty neatly. This has been a lot of fun. Another season of Ivy League basketball. Yale, your champions this year, but we'll be back at it in November. Congratulations to the Bulldogs. Congratulations that are richly deserved. Well, everyone, go enjoy baseball season. Go enjoy Major League Soccer. Go enjoy the fresh air. I know no one gets enough of it during the winter. and we will be back in November here on IvyHoopsOnline.com. I'm Peter Andrews. Thanks so much for listening to Season 2 of On the Vine. Have a good night. There he is. There he is.